In the fall of 2016, there was a terrible tragedy that befell many Jewish communities in Israel that you may remember. There was a plague of wildfires. And there was a couple driving away from their home, and the husband says quietly to his wife in the car as they're driving, "There goes my studio." Because one of the great tragic losses in these devastating fires was not just the destruction of people's personal property as such, but it was people's life work, their home, their possessions, not just from a gashmius, from a material standpoint, but from an emotional standpoint. And for an artist by the name of Yoram Ranan, that meant not just the value of his paintings, which ranged from, $3,000 to $50,000. It meant all of his artistic library went up in flames. And this talented painter went back to work, and he created a series of designs of paintings, magnificent, beautiful paintings. You can see many of them. They're available. They were first serialized in the Jerusalem Post in a series of articles. And then you can also find them on aish.com. Yoram Ranan, beautiful artist, wrote a book. Well, actually, he drew the drawings. His wife wrote a pirush called Art of Revelation. After everything was destroyed, he began a new project of painting pictures according to the parashios. And that became this beautiful book. And he was interviewed at some point afterwards, and he said, yes, it was a personal loss, but in the end, it actually enabled him to create something new and to do something different. And now you can find online, you could see the interview, and he has a new studio, Baruch Hashem, and he's painting, and he has magnificent, beautiful paintings.
What is his last name again?
Ranan. Do you see the picture on the top right of the book called Art of Revelation? On the left, you see one of several depictions, one of several paintings that he has of a feature, a piece of the Mishkan, of the Beis HaMikdash, a central motif in our Avodas Hashem, and one which is subject to significant controversy. You see what that is? It's the Kruvim, the cherubs, you would say in English. And that is going to be the focus of our discussion this morning, Allah, as we begin to prepare for Parshas Truma. What is the story with these Kruvim? Because we know that there is a source for them. The Pasuk tells us, you see here in source number one, there should be more sheets going around. Va'asisa shnayim Kruvim zav, you should make two Kruvim of gold. Miksha ta'asa osam, you should make them hewn from one block. Mishnei k'tzos ha'kapores, from two edges of the kapores. So what is the kapores? The kapores was a flat panel of gold which lay on top of the Aron Kodesh. I am careful to say that it lay on top of the Aron Kodesh. It also covered the Aron Kodesh, but it's important to note, and this is not really for today, it's for a separate discussion, but Ein Sham, remember a couple of weeks ago we mentioned the Halakha, the late Gaon, Reb Shlomo Fisher, who just passed away a few months ago. So in his Sefer, in Beis Yishai, he has a whole drasha about this Nekuda, that the Kaporis wasn't simply a cover for the Aron. As we will see, the Kaporis was an independent Kli, so to speak. It had its own purpose, which is what we're going to talk about at the end today, and that it rested on the Aron. But I don't know, when I was growing up, I always thought that the Kaporis was just the cover for the Aron. It was a cover for the Aron, but it was not just a cover for the Aron. It's going to be an independent Kli, which we'll see. And what Rav Shlomo Fischer discusses there is how to understand the relationship between the Aron and the Kaporis. Maybe it's similar to the relationship between maybe the heart and the mind. It's a very interesting essay in the Beis Yishai. But not for today, but you should just be aware, the Kaporis is not just an add-on. Okay. How should it be structured? Va'asei, kruv echad mikatsam yizeh, ukruv echad mikatsam yizeh, min ha-kaporis, tasu es ha-kruv malshnei ketzosav. The Kaporis is part and parcel. It's melded, or it's hewn from the Kaporis. And here's the description. Vahoyu ha-kruvim, porse knafayim lamayla. They had wings above. Sochachim b'chanfeim ala kaporis, upneim ishalachiv. They faced each other, these kruvim. So they were some form, some statue that had wings. Ela kaporis upnei akruvim. They should be facing this way. If this is the kaporis, they should be facing this way. And many of you are familiar with the Gemara that describes how these forms were animated by the way that, so to speak, we have a relationship with the Rabbono Shel Olam, that they might be facing each other, right? Exactly, they might be facing away, and how when the Rabbono Shel Olam left Kiviyachol, when he left the Beis HaMikdash, and he allowed the marauders to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, they saw that the Kruvim were embracing each other, which is also a whole beautiful Nekuda, a lot of important things to talk about for the Kruvim. We could spend many, many weeks. But I want to focus on one simple aspect in terms of the controversy regarding the Kruvim themselves, which is how much time has the Ribbono Shel Olam told us, spent telling us in the Chumash, not to make graven images? A whole lot. And yet, in the Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Holiest of Holy, where only the Kohen Gadol could go once a year, Lefnai V'Lefnim, otherwise, if a person goes in there, what do we have? If someone were to open and see, they would see carved images. So there is a fascinating, I do not know, and he didn't tell me the author of this text, Professor Dr. David Shaivitz, my chaver from the neighborhood, when I told him I was looking into this, so he sent me something fascinating. He said this is an unpublished piece which he found and he published, but this is a Jewish anti-Christian polemical text. You see, it's a Bodleian manuscript. Look at this next piece. It's a good thing you came today. Otherwise, you would have to get this personally from Dr. Shaivitz. But I'm glad you're here, that you get this inside scoop. This rare piece. Em shalachal mashal, the Sefer says. The name of the text is Tshuva Laminim, response to the heretics. I'll tell you a story. Lama dover doma. You know what this is like? Lamelech Basar Vadam, like a human king, Shekosav Charuza Bekosel Hechalo, that he wrote an announcement in his palace. Hevu Tamim Velo Sechto. Be good, don't sin. That's what he wrote on the wall. Right? It's like, remember when we were growing up, the teachers used to put up the signs on the wall, right? That's what the king does. He puts up a sign and he writes, do good, not evil. Simple. Vihine Amar Balibo, he thought in his heart, Yesh Hamon Am, there are lots of, Hamon Am means illiterate people, and Noshim Ektanim, and women who in those contexts were uneducated, and children, She'inim Yodim Lichro Lichsov, they don't know how to read or write. So they're going to come to the palace and they're not going to get the memo. So what should we do instead? V'hiniach litzayer tachas hacharuza meis munach al kliva ve'esh soreif tachtav. He drew a picture of a guy dead, being burnt up or under, right, this hangman's noose. Betzir ze yavinu kulam hacharuza shacharuza mora shalo yechta adam shalo yindo begehenem kamar betzir ze. The person will know that what the message is probably, don't end up like that guy who's burnt and dead. Don't end up like that. Right? Remember like those old ads, like the no smoking in the 80s? Just say no, and they had the picture of like black lungs or something. So that's what the king says. Don't do this, says the Sefer. Kach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is wild. Kosav v'aseres ha-dibros, he wrote in the aseres ha-dibros, lo sas l'cha pesav v'chol t'muna. Don't make any images. V'nosan ha-luchos ba'aron. And he put the luchos in the aron. Amar, but he said, yesh noshim u'ketan v'avodim shalo yuchlu l'chro achsav, lo sas l'cha pesav. But there are people who won't know how to read what it says in the luchos. Not that anybody's opening the, right? Just follow the train here. So what does he do? Tziva lasus tzir ala aron. He said, to put an image on the aron. Vehema kruvim. And they are kruvim. Re'u, look. Kazesh etzivisi. This is what I told you. Shalo lasos. Don't do that. Bepartzufim. In these faces. Befartzufim elu. Imkein hatzir v'akruvim. Him monim, they prevent avodah zara. Ve'inam nechshav al avodah zara. Had God not told us to make kruvim, and I think this is very well accepted, had HaKadosh Baruch Hu not commanded that there should be kruvim in the Mishkan, of course it would have been usur to make kruvim. Obviously, that's a violation of creating a girev and ivenj. The chiddush of this suggestion, this wild suggestion, is that the Ribono Shel Olam created the kruvim so that we should learn not to make avodah zarah. That this is the only place where you're going to find this.
So this painting is a painting of graven images that shouldn't happen.
So I think what it's trying to say is that you have a text. The text says, "Don't do something bad," and this is the artistic manifestation of what that bad thing looks like or will lead you to, or that's the cautionary vision that we want you to see. So he's saying the same thing is don't make graven images which will look like this, because that's going to lead you to do bad things. There is a little bit of a disconnect, because in the first case it's more about imagining the consequence, and in the case of the kruvim, it's imagining what you're not supposed to do. But that's what this polemic is trying to get at. What am I drawing from this? Because I don't know the significance of the author and the context of this, is that when you look at the kruvim, the first thing that comes to your mind is that this is avodah zarah. So we have to have a special limud. The Torah has to tell us, it's okay, you can make kruvim because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us to. But had we not had that, we wouldn't have made kruvim. So that already, the kruvim, they have this controversial nature, so to speak. So you have to ask yourself, wait a second. Why would the Ribono Shel Olam do that? This polemical text, it's a very hard argument to make, right? Seriously? The Ribono Shel Olam is trying to take, it's like Lahotzi Malibam Shel Avodah Zarah, so that he's going to make kruvim so you should know. It's a very wild suggestion. That's very difficult to accept that's really what the function of the kruvim is. So what is the function of the kruvim? And why would you have kruvim if it leads you to this potential danger? Or put it differently, why is it that the kruvim are okay, appropriate, and essential to the mikdash, but they're not accepted outside? What's the difference? So let's come back. Let's take a step back for a second before we get to that question, to look at the controversy about what the kruvim actually look like. Because the pasuk just says that they are kruv. Well, what is the meaning of the word kruv? So the Gemara says in Sukkah, you see here, turn the page, number 3. According to the Gemara, the letter chaf is not part of the shoresh. The letter chaf is the chaf hadimyon. It's kruv, like a ruv. What is ruv? Rav Huna Nami Mehacha Gamir, he says, this is the original piece of the Gemara, is that the Pnei Kruvim were, the faces were the size of a tefach. That's how large the faces were. Umay Kruv, Am Rabbi Abo says, Ki Ravya, like a child. Shekin Bebavel, Korin Le Yanuka Ravya. In Bavel, they call a child Ravya. So this is the source for the tradition that the Pnei HaKruvim were the images of children. But what was the Kruv itself? The Pnei may have been of children. So the Rashbam, so this is Rashi's grandson on Chumash, right here. Kruvim, what are they? Ophos. They were birds. Why? Because he quotes a pasuk in Yecheskel, Es Kruv, Of Godol is Baal Knafayim. He translated as a large winged bird. And then he quotes the Gemara that the Chacham said it's a Pnei Tinok. So basically, Pasuk Yecheskel, he says that the body of the Kruvim was a bird. If you look, Rav Yosef Bechor Shor, he says in number 5, back in Bereshis, we're going to get to in a little bit, the first time the word Kruvim appears, we're going to get to, he says, Es HaKruvim, Hein Malachim Bidmus Shvarim. It was in the Malach of the shape of an ox. Why? Because the word Charisha in Hebrew, in the Gemara's Aramaic language, is Chariv. It's the context there of Bava Kama. It also appears in the context of Hilchos Shabbos. So Kruv, the Chaf is not a Chaf Hadimyon of like a Ravya. It's Karvi. Karvi means to plow. What plows? An ox. So you have a bird, an ox, and then you have a third option. This is a Radak in Malbim, in Malachim. The Radak says, Arroyos, Tsuros Arroyos, Vitsuras Bakar, Vitsuras Kruvim. What are Kruvim? Shehem, Tsuras Adam, Elishayesh Lahem Knafayim. It is the form of a person, just they have wings. So it's either the form of a bird, of an ox, or of a person. Now there is a fellow, here are two articles. One appears in this volume of Biblicon 2015. This one is from Tarbitz, and I did not find where it is, but I saw recently, I think in 2021, he authored an entire book on this topic. His name is Ranan Eichler. He was a Harvard fellow. Now he's a professor in Bar-Ilan, I believe. He's a professor in Bar-Ilan. And his life work, his PhD, his book, and a bunch of articles are all on this topic, Cherub, A History of Interpretation. And one of the things that he does, which is interesting, is he researches iconography of antiquity, trying to understand what is the context in which the Kruvim. So this article in Hebrew is in Tarbitz, but the book is in English. So he has several published essays, so he has an interesting suggestion. He weighs in on this. I don't know how many other people are as excited as he is about the Kruvim, but he's very excited about this. It's his life work. I believe that the anonymous sage in the Medrash HaGadol, there is a Medrash HaGadol, which is the earlier source to the Radak, the Radak's Mahalak, that it's a person, and that the cherubim are winged humans. Recall that the Ark Kruvim in the temple are described as having a wingspan that equals their height, based on the pasuk in Malachim. Not only four-legged animals, but also upright creatures, rather real ones such as birds or fantastic ones such as winged snakes, would have to have comically short wings in order for their wingspan to be only as great as their height. So you think proportionately, it would look, now not that the Ribbono Shel Olam needs to have it proportionally to what you would think, but that's his interesting. Indeed, we don't find any depictions of these creatures in the iconographic record that have these proportions. Only humans who stand erect on long legs are by far the tallest of any of the candidates in proportion to their other dimensions. And then if you look on the next page, he gives you this Da Vinci drawing. When depicting a winged human, it would make sense to portray the wings as having the length of arms. He also points out an interesting raya that the pasuk says that and it's also later in Yecheskel, that the wings are covering. Sochem bechanfehem. Well, if you have a four-legged animal, then it's more that the body of the animal is covering the kapores, as opposed to if you have upright standing and the wings are covering the kapores. So this is interesting, and maybe this is something for further study in the context of Machon HaMikdash, where they are preparing vessels for the, you know, the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu. But let's go back now that we have three just things to consider, to imagine for what these kruvim look like, to go back to the core question, which is, what is the function of the kruvim, and why is it significant that they were dafka in the mikdash, and that they were not outside of the mikdash? Okay, so whenever we want to know the shoresh of something, the best place to look is the first time it appears in the Torah. That gives you an inkling as to the inyan hapnimi, the core kernel of what it is. So there is a fascinating interpretation. This was in a different article from Dr. Eichler where he points this out. That if you look carefully, the first time that the word kruvim appears, vayigoresh es ha'adam, after that first fateful error, HaKadosh Baruch Hu expels Adam, Vayashkein mikedem legan Eden esakruvim, and he placed to rest east of Eden the kruvim, veislat hacherav hamisapeches, and this flashing, flaming, swiveling sword, vishmoras derech etzachayim, which on one level sounds like it's to protect Adam from eating from the etzachayim, from getting back there. And so Adam is expelled from Gan Eden, and he's being kept at bay. What's the role of the kruvim? Sounds like it's to keep him at bay. So if you look in the Onkelos, v'sorach yas Adam, he threw out Adam, v'ashrei milikadim leginsa, and he placed on the east of the Gan de Eden of Eden yas kruvaya, the kruvim, v'yashnein charba, and this sharp sword, Timis Hapcha, that switches around, Lamitar Yas Orach Ilein Chaya. Okay.
So use them as guards again?
That's what it sounds like. Oh. But if you look, this is fascinating in the Targum Yerushalmi, which I was able to get thanks to the Bar Ilan. You can get, in some of the Chumashim it appears, but not in all the Chumashim. So in the Bar Ilan, in the bottom, you're able to get the original text. This is absolutely fascinating. Utrad yas Adam, and he moves down, he lowers, he takes out Adam, va'ashrei, and he placed yikar shchinte. Yikar shchinte, the glory of his presence, min lekadmin mi mindach leginsa, from before, from the east of the garden de Eden, Me'ilove train kruvaya, on the top of these two kruvim, kodam, to the etc. And then the Targum Yerushalmi goes on to explain how before the world was created there was Torah. And it goes on to a long agadata, which is not for us right now. But wait a second. The way to read the pasuk according to this Talmud, this Targum Yerushalmi, is Vayigoresh es ha'adam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu expelled man, vayashkein mikedem legan Eden, and he caused something to be shochein, to rest. You know that word sounds a lot like the word shchina. Vayashkein mikedem legan Eden es hakruvim. So when one of my kids was in fourth grade, they used to say that the word es means, I think they used to say, pointer to the object of the verb, something like that. S is a it was some kind of funny grammatical term that meant he put the kruvim, that's it. As a parent, I was like, okay, yes, whatever the Rebbe says, that's exactly what it is. I didn't know what they were saying. Pointer to the object of that. I should have called my English professor. But the word S also can sometimes mean, like for example, vaya'alu ito. S means with, right? You could say with imo, ani holech imcha, O, ani holech itcha. The word es can mean with. It sounds like from the Talmud Yerushalmi, the way to read this is es hakruvim vayashkein, he rested the presence of the Borei Olam with the kruvim. Oh, if that's true, now it actually makes perfect sense. What are the kruvim? The kruvim are these space creators. The kruvim, they are the context in which the Shekhinah rests. And adraba, it's not just that the kruvim are not to be worshipped. The purpose of the kruvim is to be socheich, to create a space, an empty space, because that's where the Ribbono Shel Olam rests, kiviyachol. The Ribbono Shel Olam does not express himself in any physical form at all. Where does HaKadosh Baruch Hu speak to Moshe Rabbeinu from? Mibein Shnei HaKruvim, the Pasuk says. The Shekhinah, so to speak, lives between the Kruvim in the empty space. Because there's no such thing as anything physical capturing the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's why when the Medrash describes, the Gemara describes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he left, so to speak, from the Beis HaMikdash before the destruction, he took 10 stops. He left from between the Kruvim. The Kapores was not just a cover of the Aron. The Aron is not the main thing, and the Kruvim are just extra. The Aron has one function, to carry the Luchos Ha'edus, to be the testimony, to be the Torah Shebichsav, the Ksuba. But where is the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam Kiviyachol? It's between the Kruvim. It's in the empty space. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu expelled Adam HaRishon from Gan Eden, what did he do? He said, don't worry. I will make a space in the world that'll still be with you. Especially according to the view of the Rishonim that the Chet HaEgel preceded the Mishkan, the Ribbono Shel Olam is telling us, don't worry. I will create a space in which somehow in this world I can still be with you. That's the job of the Kruvim. The job of the Kruvim are to create like a tent. They're porous, they cannot find. That's why the Gemara tries to measure exactly how big the wings were. Their job is to create a space. Maybe that's why it's interesting. The Gemara has an expression that the Aron was Eina Min Hamida. The Aron had no measurement. Because once you do the numbers of the wings and the Kruvim and the box, it doesn't fit in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The answer is it doesn't have a Mida. Why not? Because the whole point is that as much as for us in the Mikdash V'Shachanti V'Socham, we can build a physical structure, but Eiz Debayis Asher Tivnu Li. There is no physical expression of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's beyond space. It's beyond constriction of limits. So it's just a vacuum, so to speak. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is between the Kruvim. Sochem Bekanfeim, it's an empty space, Bedafka. And that's where the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to us. So now, we want to understand, well, why is it that we can't create that concept, that model, outside the Beis HaMikdash? Obviously, the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to construct this physical representation to express the Gilui Shekhinah in the world. So why can't a person do that anywhere? So now turn to the last source, to this piece in the Ein Hayah. Rav Kook, for yet many decades, was working on a commentary on the Agadic sections of the Gemara. He got through Brachos and Shabbos. And these comments of the Ein Hayah are absolutely incredible. The level of creative genius is remarkable. It's incredible. It's one of the gifts that I have now. I have a chavrusa that we try to learn once a week, a piece or two of the Ein Hayah. How Rav Kook sees in the Gemara, where they talk about the proportion of how much mustard in a sandwich, to teaching you how much mustard you should have in your Derech HaChaim of Avodas Hashem, every other piece, it's just another level of genius built on another level of genius. So I understand some of what Rav Kook is writing here. What's the context? The Gemara says, Espargus, which is some kind of breakfast drink, that you would drink on an empty stomach, although it sounds like asparagus was based on a plant, some kind of plant beverage that you would drink in the morning, which does not resemble anything that was in this cup. I don't know if any natural ingredients were harmed in making what I drank today.
Could it be related to asparagus?
It might be related to asparagus. I'm not sure. So the Gemara says, Yafa lalev, it's good for your heart. V'tov la'inayim, and it's good for your eyes. U'v'kol shekein l'bnei me'ayim, of course, it's good for your digestion. V'haragel bo yafa l'chol gufo, and if you drink this regularly, it's good for your whole body. V'hamishtaker mimenu kasha l'chol gufo, but if you become intoxicated from this beverage, it's very dangerous for your entire being. So Rav Kook looks at this Gemara, which, if you and I were to read this Gemara, what would we say? We'd say, ah, it's a comment to the Gemara that Chazal were trying to give you a good eitzah about how to eat a healthy breakfast. That's it. So Rav Kook says, no, there's such depth to this. It's teaching you something deep. He says that a person, take a look on the right side, it's an Os Mem Dalet. Roy la'odam sheyismach b'chayav. Second paragraph, third line. It's appropriate, it's correct that a person should be happy and enjoy in their life. And that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us this as a gift. Ki ko nasan Hashem mimidas ha-simcha. He gave us this gift that's how we should live. And that we should enjoy the hargasha of yofi shel habriya kula. Art. Right? We should find that it's pleasing. We should live, like the Rambam writes in the Perashat Mishnayos, we should live in a home that gives us harchavas hadas, that we find is beautiful. Amnam, go down three lines. Last word in line is Amnam. Roy laham itchunas halev al mechona. We should make sure to establish the quality of the heart in its proper place. Kadeshu yargish halev es yofi shel hametzias kula. That the heart should feel, right? Your heart is your seat of emotions. So you should experience the emotions, the beauty of the whole world and all of existence. And therefore, we should have something which is yafe lalev. This idea of asparagus, says Rav Kook, it represents the idea of drinking something that you can enjoy and that it opens up your heart to experiencing beautiful things in the world. And Al Yadei, what else did the Gemara say it's good for? Your eyes, that you see something beautiful. I had a great gift, Nechama, for my birthday. She took me to see this very amazing art presentation. It's a virtual Van Gogh thing. I don't know if anybody heard of it. I never heard of it. She totally surprised me. And it was beautiful. You sit and you see, your inayim are open to the art of the world, and it was amazing. It was really magnificent. How it was like a light show projecting the different Van Gogh images. It was beautiful. It was a very memorable night out, the two of us. It was amazing. And the Rav Kook is saying, this is the Tov La'inayim, and it's the beauty of the artistic genius that's out there in the world. And this, the Hod and the Hadar, take a look. Go now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines up to the dot. Omnam, he says. Let's be careful about this Van Gogh and all of this. Omnam, chidud hachushim v'yisron argosha saleh b'tzad yofi shalom etzius. The sharpening of the senses and the feelings of the heart from the artistic aesthetic of life. Kisha adam ragil b'hem, when a person is accustomed to them. That a person uses it in the right way, but often shaloti tarif daito amusaris, that a person doesn't become confused morally, mehamamas hahadrachitzoni, because there is a danger of pursuing the aesthetic, the external. Hu yafalachol gufo. If a person is rogelbo yafalachol gufo, if you eat the asparagus, if you enjoy art on a regular basis, the experiences of the aesthetic on a regular basis, that's great. And it makes the person potentially even go straight. It gives you a place to be healthy and good in this world. But if a person goes overboard, goes out of the appropriate context, Mishalo, last line on the first column, Mishalo, Hirgal Nafsho Lishtamish Bakarasoho, top of the next column, Vayofisha Bachaim Lataklisa Maritsuya, a person who has not refined themselves internally, is not spiritually calibrating themselves so that they can put the art in a proper context. Who mishtaker mehadar habara kachitzoni, the person becomes intoxicated by the external beauty. And what does it do? V'yavo lintos achar ha-havraka ha-chitzonis. It pulls the person after this very alluring external beauty. And there's a danger. Ad she-yazov tu'udas hayofi umatarasa. All of a sudden the person becomes obsessed with the beauty, with the art, with the physical. And it loses its goal. V'yafsid ha-musogim ha-mitim. And all of a sudden, the person could destroy their life. What is Rav Kook saying? That there is a place for art, but it's in a context. It's got to be that you are a refined spiritual being who can appreciate the world of art and the humanities in the context of a ruchnius, values-based, Torah and halachically rooted context. For Rav Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, appreciating humanities fell within the purview and enhanced his understanding of the Tzelem Elohim and the Ribono Shel'Olam's world. So he says, Rav Kook, we have to be careful. Go halfway down the paragraph, the last word on the line, the last letter, the last little number 4 in this edition. This is the second edition of the Ein Hayah. We don't have time to read the whole thing, so I'm skipping ahead. Al-Kain, he says, therefore, Hinanu Muzharim, we are cautioned. Lenahel es rigashos hanefesh, to guide the feelings of our soul or our life source. Upituach choshe hayofi, and the development of our appreciation of art. Al pi meseg hasechel eloki. It has to be calibrated based on the intellectual, spiritual measure. We don't just embrace art, whatever it is. We first look at the art through the lens of ruchnius, of how does this nurture the Ribono Shel'Olam's view of the world. Ulefi rov hashlita hasichlis, to the greater shlita, control of your intellect. Kein yigdal gam kein shimosh hayofi. Then, to that extent, will it become valuable, the role of Yofi. But it's got to be from the intellect. Because a person who is wholly romantic and carried away by their emotions, they could totally destroy their world. They're yishtaker. They're intoxicated by the beauty of the art. And they end up kasha l'kol gufo. Their entire life is ruined. So he says, ad shebeis hamikdash shesham hu machon l'or haseichel ha-tor. Until you come to the Beis HaMikdash. In the Beis HaMikdash, you have the most pristine, clear view of the Ribono Shel Olam. The Hashras HaShechina means that the Seichel, the intellect, the values, the truth, the aura of light, that's permeating everything. So therefore, Hu HaMachon, Hu Gam Kein Noyo Shel Olam, it's also the most beautiful place in the world. Upartzuf Adam, and this is the key line for us now. The image of a man, Sha'asur Lasos Afilu Liofi. You cannot make the statue of a man for beauty in your own home. Why? Because clearly making the statue of a person could take a person away from Avodas Hashem. Because it could somehow impute the value of a human being as somehow being in control of anything, of something that we should vault into a position of worship. As opposed to Ein Od Mavado. The Ribono Shel Olam is everything. Through the lens of Ein Od Mavado, you look at the world. But through that lens of Ein Od Mavado, the Yofi, the beauty of a Jewish home, the beauty of a Shabbos table, it's totally in its proper place. Now, says Rav Kook, I can understand why the Beis HaMikdash was a place of Yofi. It was Noyo Shel Olam. The Gemara says at the beginning of Bava Basra, they dafka used a part of the Mikdash when they renovated it in the second Beis HaMikdash. The renovations, they used copper. Why? Because the way that the sun shone on the copper, it looked like waves. They didn't use gold. Why? Because of the aesthetic. I'm very glad that the Kohanim's job is not going to be responsible for the aesthetic elements of the Mikdash. We're going to leave that to somebody else. I'm just going to go and work. They're going to tell me to shecht. I'm going to shecht. That's very fine. I could do Zrikas Adam. They're going to call somebody else to do the... But it's interesting, right? They didn't say it's going to be like an old shtiebel with wood paneling from the 70s. No, it's Noyo Shalom. There's an aesthetic that's part of appreciating what the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us. But there are certain things that no matter how hard we work to refine ourselves, in our world, in our lives, where we are, they're never going to work. It's always going to be too dangerous. So that's the parts of Adam. You can make a beautiful home, but you may not make a statue. It's too dangerous. But says Rav Kook, where is the one place you're going to place a statue? In the Beis HaMikdash. Because there, Kasher kach yasalonu lahagbil gam kein regesh hayofi. When you go to the Beis HaMikdash, because al pi mishvar aseicha v'lo litein lo kol shultono. When you go to the Beis HaMikdash, the only thing you think is ein od milvado. And through the lens of ein od milvado, all aspects of the world, every expression of art is going to fit in. It's not going to take you away. It's not like that first source that said, oh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put the Kruvim there because he wants us to say, don't do that. It's fakert. It's that when you go to the Beis HaMikdash, even something, an artistic representation, which would not be acceptable somewhere else, here falls into context. Avo b'mokom ha-mikdash, b'kodesh ha-kadoshim, shama on mitzuvim anachnu lahamenes ha-kruvim. There we put the Kruvim. Shepnei Adam Lahem. Barav Ki Sharon. Ki Roy Litein Lahayofi Chelko. It is appropriate to put the portion of the Yofi. Kefi Erech Hagbaras HaSeichel Olav. To the extent proportioned to the Seichel. To say to the proportion of the Amitas HaAdam. Hatzlachaso. Ma Rabu HaAmim. He says, how many nations are there? Sheishtakru Mimashu Yafel Lev. He doesn't say, but who is he probably talking about? Many, many nations, especially Greeks. Shehishtakru, they became intoxicated with what is beautiful to the eyes. So they followed the aesthetic. But they lost out on the inside. This is like, it's a great Hanukkah Torah. This is like the Nekudah HaPnimis. That Rav Kook is saying, Yaft Elokim Liefes. There is a place for beauty. There's even a place for sculpture, for artistic expression, but it's v'yishkon ba'ol le'shem. And this is why the Kruvim are so controversial. Because we have to figure out, we have to be attuned to the distinction. If a person were to go into the Beis HaMikdash and not realize this, they might somehow be, right, if they weren't paying attention to the Mikdash, or if they just read this, they might be confused. Because they might think, well, if it's acceptable in the Mikdash, it's acceptable anywhere. But the answer is no. The Kruvim are a makom, they are a place that represents, that creates a space for Asherah Sashchina, and that magnifies this idea of a relationship between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it's expressed through an artistic medium. That concept of an artistic medium needs to be put in context. And that's why we have to distinguish between the Mikdash and the Gvulin. Like many other areas of Halacha, but Rav Kook sees this as a fundamental kavana in life. It's a life orientation. Are we becoming intoxicated with the physical world? With the Yofi that is in the lave, in the heart, and in the Einayim, and in the eyes? Or are our Einayim and our lave within the control of our seichel? Could you imagine that Rav Kook saw this in one line of Gemara about drinking asparagus for breakfast? Just consider that for a second. But Rav Kook says that's what it means in the Gemara, that it's yafil lave, v'tov le'inayim, v'kol shekein le'bnei me'ayim. What's your bnei me'ayim? Your guts, your physical. Of course, nourishing, taking care of your physical is good. And if you are constantly putting that into your life, and you have that shalvas hanefesh, and you have that beautiful art, that's great. But it's dafka, it's got to be controlled. V'amishtaker kasha l'chol gufo. You ruin your whole world. How many nations have we seen who have lost track of this? As opposed to anachnu, einenu, where are our eyes, says Rav Kook? El Hashem Elokeinu. Our eyes are to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does it say about the Beis HaMikdash? V'hayu einai v'libi sham kol hayom. My eyes and my heart are there in the Mikdash to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kvod Elokim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there. Amikdashenu shu noyo shol olam shemisham yatzah ha'ora. The light ultimately is the light of Torah, the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Or Ein Sof. And within that light, it can be reflected and refracted through the beautiful Yofi and even the artistic expression of the Kruvim.